Blog Talk Radio.
Oh, that's great. That sounds terrific. Thank you.
The headlines was, Scott Sisters released from Mississippi prison
transplant next. Those are just some of the articles that I saw on there, but there were numerous articles about them. But the one that struck me most was one that was written by change.org. And he wrote an article that I found to basically sum up what these ladies have gone through. The article started with, well, the case of the Mississippi sisters, Jamie and Gladys Scott, proved that sometimes truth is stranger than fiction. In 1993, the two black women reportedly took part in an $11 robbery. For that crime in which no one was harmed, you would think they would have avoided hard times. Instead, the Scott sisters, who had no priors, were ordered to serve two consecutive life sentences. That's right, back-to-back life sentences for petty theft. The Scott sisters, excuse me, were 19 and 21 when the robbery occurred, served 16 years. Meanwhile, three male acquaintances, also convicted in the robbery, were freed after serving just a couple of years. The men reportedly received lighter sentences in exchange for providing the prosecution with incriminating information against the Scott sisters. The authorities never even argued that the Scott sisters committed the robbery. Instead, they were accused of luring two men into a trap in which the men had their wallets taken by the acquaintances of the sisters, one of whom had a shotgun. So, in a nutshell, to make it clear, that is what this is all about. These ladies received two double life sentences. Well, both of them received double life sentences for luring two men supposedly into a trap. At this point, I'm going to bring in my co-host. Good afternoon, AJ. After hearing that, what do you think?
Well, I think, you know, we've talked about this a time or two before. I just think it's tragic that even in this day and time, it's almost like you can still be railroaded or, you know, basically hung, you know, just hung out to dry for nothing just because of the animosity of what somebody feels about someone, somebody trying to make a statement about something. You know, it's truly tragic, and that they would have to miss out on so much of their lives because of this particular incident. And then once you read more about it, you say, how could this be? Basically, that's all I can come up with is, how can this be in this day and time that anybody can get any time for this?
I completely agree. Well, AJ, we're going to get a chance to hear it from the ladies themselves. If you're ready, I'm ready. You ready?
Hey, I'm ready.
Okay. Well, ladies and gentlemen, AJ will be in the chat room today, so if you have questions or comments and you're listening via the Internet, you can also post it up in chat. A reminder, the views and opinions of our guests do not necessarily reflect that of Center Stage or our host. At this time, I'd like to introduce to the Center Stage audience for the first time the Scott sisters. Good afternoon, Jamie and Gladys. How are you?
We're fine.
How are you? How y'all doing?
We're good. And also, Mr. Gregory, are you with us?
God bless you. Peace and love to you and to the Scott sisters. We just thank and pray to God that from this point on, you know, when you've been someplace for 16 years, you adjust to it.
Mm-hmm.
And now you have to unadjust to it. We got a guy out of jail, Mark Lane, that had been framed for killing seven of his children. And stayed in jail, stayed on death row for 19 years. And then Mark Lane went in and took a team, and we worked. And what we proved was that the sheriff, the white sheriff, had been dating his wife. And then her sister came to town, and they had a thing going. And the wife quit him for another man. And he was so angry, he went in and put poison in their lunch food. They came over there for lunch and blamed it on the father. And the father went to jail. And he stayed there almost 21 years before Mark Lane and Will got him out. And then they settled out of court. Janet Reno, she was the attorney general in Florida at the time. The reason I'm telling you this, after he got out, it was just incredible. He came with me for a while and was doing, you know, radios and TV shows.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, wait, I can't handle this. You know, 21 years you never had to tie a shoe. They didn't have shoestrings in. 21 years you in the yard, you don't have to look each way to see. He would walk out on the corner. He's doing a thing in Chicago. And I had to grab him. He just walked, getting ready to walk across the street. But for that many years, he never had to look at a stop sign or turn his head one way or the other. And so I say that today to you all, there's a whole lot of adjustment, and you have to adjust for knowing you've been framed. Now, I'm not going to get into that because a whole lot of things y'all can't talk about, a whole lot of things y'all don't. But I'm 80 years old. I've been in Mississippi. I've been in. We was there when all the civil rights folks were scared to go, and we went to Greenwood, Mississippi. And you see, most folks don't know at one time in Mississippi, the Ku Klux Klan couldn't operate in there because the White Citizen Council said, y'all ain't nothing but some punks. We got to terrorize them. And for 10 years, nobody know what was happening down there the way the White Citizen Council terrorized the whole fear thing. It was incredible. And so I know what goes on down there and what happens down there. We got a guy by the name of Clyde Kennard, who he in 1955, way before James Meredith, wanted to go to Ole Miss. He wanted to go to Mississippi State. And they framed him. He was at the University of Chicago, and his father had a chicken farm. His father died, so he came back to run the chicken farm, and at the same time wanted to finish his master's degree, and he was a veteran. And it was real touchy, because he was a veteran, because he had no criminal record. And they framed him with two bags of chicken feed.
Wow.
And put him in jail for 7 years. While he was there, cancer caught up with him, and they got black folks in jail to say he was lying. He wasn't in no pain. He just didn't want to work. When we found out about it, we took a plane. Well, the press first gave it to the press, and it got so much worldwide publicity, they decided to let him out and come to Chicago, the University of Chicago, to get treatment and a cobalt machine. And when they let him out, we rented a Delta cargo plane and flew him up to Chicago. It was too late. In about 4 months, he died anyway. But I'm saying what goes on there is a horror story. And so when I read what you all were going through, so I first read about it was the brother that writes for the New York Times. Now, there was a lot of people that was on the case, but the New York Times went around the world. And it was just incredible. So I'm sitting and I'm saying, wait a minute. You know, it took me 3 weeks to find out if those folks was black or white, because normally they say, you know, white men. We know that they don't care what happened to a black person. They ain't going to give you that much time. So at first I thought it was white men. And then as we snooped around, and then after you all got out, somebody was trying to interview the two black guys, and they said, we can't talk. And I said, oh, wait a minute, this don't sound right. Somebody's shutting up. So there's more to it. And I didn't get here today to tell you about that. I know what went down.
Wow.
And a whole lot of things you all can't talk about, but that's a hate thing. That's not just a Negro. It's a hate thing. Somebody was punishing you. And the normal way they do is kill you.
Wow.
But they say, no, we're going to do this different. And so, again, I say that the things that you all know that you can't talk about, you have to unwind that out of your all of that, because it turns into shame, and then it fouls up the whole body. You know, most folks don't know that more people die in America from lung cancer, from grief, than smoking cigarettes. And so grief is a violation of God. When you look at the Superman, the guy who played Superman, and had an accident plant with a horse. And after he died, 18 months later, his wife died from lung, and everybody said she didn't smoke. That's grief. I knew Coretta Scott King personally. The last 12 years of her life, she ate nothing but raw fruit and vegetables. What she died from was that whole thing of grief. So I say to you too, there's a whole lots of things you have to do to start unwinding, to start releasing and all of that. And I'm just so glad when I got the call that you all was going to be on the show today, so I can just tell you personally how people all over the world feel about what you all went through. Most of them don't even know what happened. They just know something wasn't right at all.
Yes.
And I'm telling you now, we're working to get some women's group to come in because, you know, not saying they wouldn't have done this to a man, but the fact that they do it to two sisters is more to it. And like I said, I know you all can't talk about it, but we're starting a campaign just asking people to pray that the truth will come out at 12 noon. Here's what this means. The people who believe everything they say you all did, they should join us because we're not asking to prove this or that. We're just saying pray and meditate that the truth will come out and the world will be shocked. You think the world is shocked now, wait till they find out what really went down. And you all might not even know what went down. But there's a whole lot of people out here that know, and we're planning on getting to the bottom of it. So, again, I just say thank you. Thank you for being strong. Thank you for having that faith. Thank you for just staying there, because had you all died in jail, they could have been ready to do it to somebody else.
Oh, that's true.
Yes.
Mr. Gregory, they are also fighting a new battle. The ladies have got to lose weight before they actually have this surgery, the kidney transplant, if I understand that correctly. Is that correct, Gladys and Jamie?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. Tell us a little bit about that.
I went to the name of my kidney doctor is Dr. Humeda, and he examined me and he told me that I have to lose 110 pounds. He said around 110 pounds. He said because, and I didn't know this, he said that when you have a transplant, the kidney don't go back in the donated kidney don't go back into its place. They have to cut through layers through your stomach, and if you're overweight, then that could be a complicated situation. So he examined me and he said that I will have to lose at least 100 some pounds, and that Gladys will have to lose 50 pounds.
Wow. And we all know that that's a struggle for any of us, let alone to be under the new pressure that y'all are under in the new world. I mean, technically, it's a new world after 16 years of being in prison. And, Mr. Gregory, you're technically what we call a diet guru. So when I talked with you this morning, I asked you if you could come on and maybe help the ladies with that. Can you tell them what you can do to help them in that area?
First, you wouldn't – we can discuss it, but you can't really get into details – on a radio show.
Okay.
But let me just say this. My top weight at one time was 365 pounds.
Wow.
And I went on a 40-day fast, protest the war in Vietnam, and I stayed on water for 40 days, then fruit juice for 40 days, then fruit, then water for 40 days. And when I came off, I was 92 pounds.
Mm.
Now, nobody would expect someone to do that. What I did, but an incident happened, and I would like for the two of you all and those of you all that brought us on the show, if sometime today, Google Walter Hudson, out of New York, right outside New York City. He weighed 1,500 pounds. He could not, when they called me, something had happened, and he couldn't get out the door. He'd been in that house for 27 years. You hear me? 27 years. He had never seen the sunrise or the sunset because he couldn't get out the door of his room. And so I went there, and I had never heard of a story in my – it was like we had died and went to another planet, and I'm looking at this It's all over. You can pull it up. You'll see it. And to think about, his mother died. He couldn't go to the funeral because he couldn't get out the door.
Mm.
His brother died. He couldn't go to the funeral because he couldn't get out the door. Let me tell you, the little thing, I asked him, say, when you get down, what is it you'd like to do? You know what he said? I'd like to walk in snow.
Oh.
For 27 years, I haven't been able to walk in snow. He said, I'd like to walk in leaves and hear the leaves crunching under my feet. And so this is what, and so we said, okay, here's what the protocol is. Then we found out that he couldn't get into the bathtub, so they would wash him down with alcohol. And when we got in there and got to working with, we found out he become addicted to alcohol. It went through the pores.
Ooh.
So we had to give him something to deal with the addiction. You hear what I'm saying? His bowels, to show you the power of God's life, his bowels had developed about the size of a washing machine.
Wow.
And so we had to go in and clean all that out. And it got to the point that we was taking that water out of him so fast, it took him like an hour to go to the toilet. And after he got there, he was so tired, he had to sit down on the bathtub before he could sit on the toilet. Now, I want you to hear this. His arms was like 27 inches. His waist was 100 and 38 inches.
Oh.
His chest was like 142. Now, I want you to hear this. Take 38 arms, length arms, in the toilet with toilet paper, and how are you going to fit them arms around 138 waist?
Wow.
He would take hangers and open them up and put toilet paper and reach around. I'm telling you what he went through. It was just the most incredible. And so we put him on a plan. We had to be there 24 hours a day. We put him on a plan, and it was in 90 days, he was down to 640 pounds.
From 1,500?
Did you hear me? Yeah, that's what I said. When y'all pull it up, it's all there. It's incredible. They came in from all over the world to look at this because they could not believe what had happened. And then we got him down, and it was like 1,000 press people from all over the world. The first day he was going to walk out the house, we could get him through the door. He told me he couldn't do it. I said, what do you mean? We're going to your mother's grave. He said, I can't do it. It was a mental thing. And I said, the formula that I developed will get rid of weight and make you healthy, but I don't have anything in here that can work with what has happened to your brain. And so I said, so I'm not going to stay here with you. I've had my people here for 90 days, round the clock, and I'm not going to punish them like that. So we're gonna walk out the door. We're going to invite the world press and say, you're walking out the door, and you couldn't do it.
Wow.
So stay with him another week and said, okay, Walter, here's what has to happen. You will not be able, if you got this fat without being able to walk to the refrigerator, Lord knows you can get out through the door now. And about a year and a half later, 2 years, he died. He put on more weight than he had.
No.
Because that type of weight, you're addicted. See, when you get that type of weight, the reason people can't get it off is it puts so much strain on your heart, your body produces a hormone that's 150 times more potent than commercial morphine. Mm-hmm. So you're addicted to that, and the body get used to it, and they know the only way they can get it is the brain has to tell you to keep eating. And so it's all of that. It's not just as easy as we think it is. Now, let me tell you something about him now. This is what blew me away. He didn't have no high blood pressure. Hello. No sugar diabetes. Hear me? He had no heart condition. And you know what I learned from that? That to be obese and not working, huh? Remember, he couldn't go to the movie, huh? He couldn't go out on the weekend. And so all of that strain that we normally, he couldn't drive a car. He couldn't go through the stress of driving a car. and all of that strain and stuff that we put on our bodies that cause all that other stuff along with how we tore up the body, he didn't go through that. And so I was just out of my mind thinking about, you mean he don't have high blood pressure? He don't have sugar diabetes? And I say that to you because to think about the things that you all weren't able to do, right? You pinned in. And so people will be surprised that you all will be more healthier than anyone think you would be. And so what I would like to do is put a system together for you. I have to talk to you off the phone, but we can handle that.
Okay.
And then, but it's a mind thing, you know. I had a clinic right down there close by y'all in Fort Lauderdale, Florida. Fort Lauderdale, Fort Walton Beach, right down the street from y'all. And people would come from all over. And let me tell you, on the way there, they'd be eating everything. When they got there, they was ready to start. About 3 days later, when that thing hit them, they was calling the police, saying, we got them locked in. We're not letting them where we weren't. But I'm saying your mind will start playing games on you because when you've been able to eat, and remember, in jail, the only thing that you free, if I get put in jail today, they interfere with my sex life, they interfere with my social life, they interfere with everything except my 3 meals a day. And when that's the only thing you have, you hold on to it. And some of the biggest riots on this planet have started from messing with folks' food in jail.
But wasn't the diet in jail not healthy to begin with? I understand that Jamie's diet was not adequate for someone with diabetes and kidney failure.
No, it never is. But I'm saying when that's all you got, dear.
Yeah.
When you know how many people died in shipwrecks because they got so thirsty they drank that salt water anyway?
Yeah.
Huh?
Yeah.
When that's all you got, it might not be good for us, but when you in jail and they're bringing you fat back and hog head, that's dinner. Huh? You don't have no choice. That's dinner. And it's
but do
the
they
only...
have any recourse, Mr. Gregory, for what they went through? Is there?
Well, sure, there's a lot of recourse, but that's legal. You know, each state got different laws. I think the biggest recourse they have, it didn't happen when the frame. Something went down before to cause this. They might not even know it. I know people that have been in jail because people thought they saw something. You hear me?
Mm-hmm.
And they didn't. Mm-hmm. All right? But that's for another day and another show. I'm just trying to talk from the health part of it. Now, the number one cause of death in America is not cancer, sugar diabetes, or kidney or lung. It's sleep deprivation. Well, that's one of the things they shouldn't have had, you know, because they can't stay up all night watching TV. They can't stay all night. And so that the number two cause of death is dehydration. That might be a hell of a problem, dehydration. Because you can drink soda pop, you can drink Kool-Aid, lemonade. When the universal God put this body together, it put it together with water. And then the third cause of death is lack of physical fitness. Now, before they got that weight on, where could they walk? How could they walk? You know, and so all of this, then everything else falls in back behind that. And so what we'll do is look and see what it is and then structure a piece for them. And we'll start you on it immediately. And the one thing that you all have to start doing before we talk is rice. Oh. When was the last time you seen a fat Chinese, right? And rice cleanses. And another thing you do is hit up Duke University Rice Diet. 90 years ago, they started that there. They made more money with the rice diet than they did with basketball or football. That's the results they got. Not just the weight. It cured everything. That's why I'm saying Duke University, just punch it up, the rice diet. And I'll work with you on that. Don't worry about that. And then look and see. And there's things out there that is so good. Garlic. onions, olive oil, you know. And so we can handle that, but the main thing is you have to start drinking water, water, water. Not 8 glasses a day. You got to drink at least 12 glasses a day, and then we'll move it up. Not distilled water. Distilled water has never been no good because distilled water was not created by the universal God. Distilled water was created by industry when they had to use water and gunpowder and all kinds of things they was making, and it couldn't have the minerals in it. And so they steamed it. And when the water turned to steam, the water go up and condense back in the water, but the metals and the stays in. And so you got people make baby formula with distilled water, and ain't nothing no worse than that. Soy, a lot of people decide they're going to eat soy. Soy bean was invented by George Washington Carver for the military. They said, can you come up with something that we can get ink, paint, glue, and plastic out of? That's soybean. They made a car out of soybean about 80 years ago. Up until about 20 years ago, all your steering wheels was made of soy. The reason vegetarians have had such a high rate of cancer is the soy. And when you all get through, punch up soybean and cancer. It will blow you away. And
let
so
pause,
again,
just,
we're...
Let me pause you just for a second, Mr.
Yes.
Gregory. If you just tuned in, you're listening to the all-new KLHC's 98.9 The Talk, bringing you center stage for today's topic and exclusive with the Scott Sisters and Mr. Dick Gregory. If you're on the line and have a question or a comment, press 1. Or if you're listening via the Internet, dial in at 347-850-8390 and, again, press 1. A reminder, Mr. A.J. Houston is manning the chat room today, so if you're listening via the Internet, post up your comments or questions in the chat room, and Mr. A.J. Houston will present them to our guests. I'm sorry I interrupted you, Mr. Gregory, and you were saying?
And so those are the things we have to go over, and the last thing I'll say to you, if the two of you all had a well in front of your house with water in it, and people came from 100 miles around to get their water. Okay, y'all follow that? And if I came and poisoned the well and didn't nobody know it, then everybody that's coming to drink from that well, they're going to die, okay? Your heart, ball up your fist right now, that's the size of your heart. And that heart was there before there was a church, before there was religion, before there was a Vatican, before there was Christians, before there was Jesus. That heart was there day one. The universe put that together, and when you look at that heart, there was no such thing as Harvard, Yale, MIT, or Morehouse. That's that universe that put it there. And what happened is like your eyebrows. Few people know what your eyebrows is to keep sweat out your eyes. That's how beautiful that universal creator was. What nothing it didn't think of. And so when that blood goes into your heart, now let me just say this, as you two sit there and everybody listening, everybody on the planet, you have 100,000 miles of blood vessels. Is that incredible? 100,000 miles of blood vessels in your body. And your blood make a complete cycle every 30 seconds, which means right now our blood is traveling 200,000 miles an hour, okay? That's the beauty of what you have. And so consequently, the blood goes into the heart, and then when it pumps, it shoots blood to every part of your body, including your eyelashes, your hair particles. Now, the reason I'm telling you this, just like if I came and poisoned your well, right, everybody that drank from it's going to die. Well, your heart, if you hanging bitter, if you're holding on to bitterness from what happened to you, that's in your heart there. If you're hanging on to hatred about how they framed you, that's in your heart there. And it's like that's why they talk about forgive. You know, pray for your sinner. They don't break it down and tell you why. I learned all this just being part of a civil rights movement. I couldn't believe somebody going to kill me and wipe my family out, and then somebody tell me pray for them. But when you start understanding how the universal God is, remember, the same white folks with them black folks that put you all in jail, the same God that made them made you.
That's an excellent question. JB and Gladys, have you all forgiven the state of Mississippi, the governor, Haley Barbour, for what they've done to you?
Yes, ma'am.
Really? Which one were you? Was that Gladys or Jamie?
This Gladys.
This Jamie. Because when you like Mr. Gregory was saying, if you hold unforgiveness, it affects you.
Yeah.
You know, it affects your well-being and stuff. And you know, in order for us to move forward, we had to just let it go. And
wow.
You know, because they have to answer for what they did, not me and Gladys. They have to answer for it.
That's right. That's
and if
big
you've
of
been
y'all.
Looking, if you've been looking at what happened over there in Egypt, you didn't see no hate. See, something happens when you free of hatred and meanness. We lost the war in Vietnam, the mightiest nation in the history of the planet, fighting some chumps. And the reason we lost it, because there's a great man over there named General Giap. And he wrote a book 35 years before we got there, and he said, give me an army that's willing to die, and I will destroy any army that's willing to kill.
Wow.
Did you hear that? And so what you looking at, and you looked at, as I looked at the whole Egyptian thing, I saw the whole civil rights movement. And it ain't no accident when last week they called for a million-man march. That was out of Minister Farrakhan's book, huh? Everything you saw happen over there came out of our book. Says, don't fight them. Love them. When they come in and go crazy with you and do all of this, don't. And nobody ever thought that they could take that thug out who was backed up by every European powerful nation in the world. And those that got killed, every weapon that was used to kill them, we paid for that in America. And that's what they were fighting. They weren't just fighting over there. They were fighting all the mighty nations that have used that country as a whore. And they didn't know how to give it up. That's why everybody got caught. And when they first came out there, they thought they could deal with them. And then once they lost their fear and didn't bring hatred in, something came over them. And let me tell you, 40% of the folks over there in Egypt make less than $2 a day. They were complaining about the high cost of milk, the high cost of bread. But when that movement took off, you heard nobody mention jobs. When we was out there marching, we wasn't talking about jobs. We wasn't talking about paying house notes. We was talking about give me my human dignity. Give me my rights that I'm born with. And when you do that, something comes over you. And when you looked at that crowd out there, they didn't, you know, you had 2 million people out there. Where'd they go to the toilet? You didn't see them leaving, going to the toilet. Where did they eat? You know what it cost to feed the 2 million people? You know all the apparatus. When that thing hit, hunger disappears, huh? When that thing hit, all the normal things you have to do. That's when you move yourself from hatred and move yourself from bitterness. And when that army came in there with that viciousness, they saw something that they realized their guns couldn't deal with. That's why they didn't shoot. They've been killing them folks over there and all at once. And so I say to you too, you know, just thank you. Just pray for all of those that was involved. You don't have to worry about that. Just pray for that and flush all of that out, and you don't have to worry about life that's waiting for both of you. So I'm just so glad that you all hung on. You did all humanity a favor by not dying in there. You did all humanity a favor by not coming out bitter in there. Even the folks who wouldn't like you, even the folks that put you in, they got to, if they listen to this show and hear how you have no animosity, no hatred, no nothing. And then that's where it's fixing to go. And I just say, thank you, as a father of 10 black children, married to a black woman for 52 years and got 12 grandchildren. My, we all owe you all a hell of a thank you and a hell of a service for what you went through by yourself. When this was happening to you, I never heard of you. Most folks in the world, now the world know who you are, and it's going to be a different day, not just for your life, There's people who's been in jail now who's been framed, and authorities know it. They worried now. They say, oh, I wonder if this is going to happen to us next. He says, so, again, we just say thank you.
You know, the life.
Thank you.
Thank you.
The life that Mr. Gregory just spoke of that you all have waiting for you. Are there movie deals? Are there book deals out there for you all already?
Well, have nobody came to us or presented us with nothing. No, not that we know of.
Okay, wonderful. Well, you know what? I'm sure if they haven't, they will. I mean, seriously. I have heard people, you know, on all kinds of shows talking about and news articles saying that Halle Berry should play y'all and all types of things. So I'm sure if they haven't, they definitely will be knocking. Like Mr. Gregory said, the animosity and the hatred that you all could have, you don't have it. What would you all say to someone who's been or is going through what you all are going through? What encouraged you all to keep going? Can you all give us some kind of indicator as how y'all kept up your spirits? Because I read somewhere that you all, no one ever saw you all down. Is that true? How did y'all keep the faith?
This is Jamie.
Okay.
I trusted and I believed in God. I didn't know how God was going to do it. I didn't know what was going to come through. But I knew that something was going to happen because we didn't commit the crime. I was seeing how people was getting out through the Innocent Project, and we wrote the Innocent Project, and they were saying that, you know, they're specializing in DNA, and DNA samples couldn't help us, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So, and my mother, you know, my mother is 4'9", and my mother's an army by herself. You know, my mother just don't take no stuff. And my mother worked day and night to try to get it through the internet, and she passed out flowers to everyone she knew. If she went inside the store, she gave a flyer. The mailman even knew about us. Everybody knew about us. So, you know, I just had this urge inside of me that wouldn't let me give up. And that one day that Gladys and I was going to walk out that prison, and, you know, I almost lost that urge when I got sick, because by me being there and seeing so many people die because of the lack of medical treatment and people catching staff because it was so horrible and filthy in there, you know, I wavered a little bit, like, you know, okay, God, is this my fate? I'm going to die right here. You know, I don't watch so many die right here. Is that going to be my fate? But I always kept this little bitty bright light inside of me that I knew. I didn't know how I was going to get out because all our appeals had been exhausted. I didn't know nothing. You know, and I always heard the older people in jail, they say, once them white folks got you, they got you, girl. They got you. And you know, and I refused to believe that because I knew that it was a high power, and I knew that there was people out there, my people, you know, black African-American, that was going to one day take a stand. I knew my mother just had to find the right one. And it started coming together. But, you know, like earlier, I would say to people that's incarcerated or the ones who ain't, that it's not easy because, yes, me and Gladys is physically let out of prison, but mentally we're still incarcerated. And it's not because we spent so many years. It's also because that under the condition we were let out, you know, we're on parole for the rest of our lives.
Yes.
You know, for the rest of us. So this is not over. And, you know, if any little thing can take us back. Say, for instance, like the other day, I'm going to use this, where we live at, it's a lady, my daughter parked in her parking space. And she's a Caucasian lady. She blocked my daughter in when my daughter could not get out and went in her house. So we came out the house. My daughter couldn't move the car nowhere because she put right up on her bumper. And she came out with such a nasty attitude. And I was saying, ma'am, my daughter just parked here to run upstairs to get the clothes. We was going to move out your parking space. Well, let me tell you, I paid such and such money. I said, ma'am, I understand that. I said, but can you move your vehicle, please? She got real, real nasty with me. Now, had I reacted to her,
yeah,
she would have called the police and just went to jail.
You would have.
Mm-hmm.
I
yeah,
would
sure.
have.
Yeah.
But see, that's what I have to live with, any little thing. I can't speak up for nothing too much because somebody can call and lie on me. And because I'm on parole, I'm considered a nothing, I go back to jail.
Wow. Oh, my goodness. Gladys, you feel the same way?
Yes, ma'am. Like Jamie was saying, you know, I kept the faith and I kept the hope. And like my mother, you know, like she said, my mother, she's an army by herself. And, you know, and she vowed, you know, after my father passed away in 2003, she vowed if it take every breath in her body that she will finish the fight that my father did. And she did that. And every, you know, every day I was getting mail from my mother. And, you know, and she would tell me and she would encourage, I mean, she was encouraging me, you know, not to give up because, you know, sometimes I would just, like, you know, write home and tell mom, look, I'm tired. I don't know if I can do this time. And, you know, she would write me every day and she would encourage me. And she would tell me, you know, how she stayed up night and day, her and Nancy Lahart, you know, working the internet, talking to people. And, you know, she would tell me not to give up. And she would tell me, before I let you give up, I'm going to fight with everything in my body. If it take me to my grave, a friend, y'all. And I just thank the Lord that, you know, we free and that she's not, you know, deceased like my father. You know, and she just a big inspiration to me because she never gave up, you know, no matter how hard things got for her and them six kids, she kept on fighting to see the day for us to be released, which was January the 7th. And so, you know, I couldn't give up because I knew I had the strongest warrior on my team, and I knew I had God for one. So,
well, shout out
and like
your mother to Nancy Lockhart, who was one of those fighters that was on your
yes.
own team, and your attorney, Shokwe Lumumba. Shout out to all of them because I don't think any of them gave up. I mean, so
no.
I read somewhere that you all always were encouraged some kind of way. No one ever really, you know, heard you all complain. So that's a testimony of the courage and the determination that both you ladies had. One thing I want to know, I just was just wondering, when I saw the news footage of you all driving away in the car, what was it like walking out of that prison knowing that you didn't have to go back? What was that day like?
At first it was scary. I thought that in the back of my mind that someone was going to stop the car and say, hey, it's a mistake, come back. Because the day before we left, we was practically threatened by the warden.
Wow.
He called us to his office and he told us, hey, I heard that y'all going to stay in Mississippi and do interviews. Y'all need to go straight to Florida and don't talk to nobody. And I told him, I said, you don't have that authority to tell us not to talk to anyone now. And you heard what I said. If y'all talk to anybody, it's going to be consequence.
Now this
he told us that the day before, so I really thought that something was going to happen and we weren't going to go home the next day.
And that's the warden of the Central Mississippi Correctional Center, right? Or correctional
yes, yes.
Okay. He needs to be fired for that. I'm just putting it out
yes.
there. Ladies, tell me this, and I talked to Jamie about this a little bit the other day. What has it been like, this instant celebrity status that you all have?
It really don't bother us. And, you know, it's strange because somebody else asked us that question.
Mm-hmm.
And it don't bother because this is our life and this is our story, our testimony. So we don't consider ourselves, you know, in no celebrity thing. We just trying to help other people that's in the same situation. And also, you know, we trying to get help because the fight is not over because we still on parole for the rest of our lives. So now we have to petition again to Governor Haley Barbour to pardon us.
Well, let's bring up that petition now. That petition is on you all's website at Free the Scott Sisters freethescottsisters.blogspot.com. Is that correct?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. That's, again, y'all, everybody needs to go sign the petition I signed on yesterday. The petition is at freethescottsisters.blogspot.com. How important, I want y'all to stress, how important is it for each and every person that may hear this podcast or be listening live today, how important is it for them to sign that petition?
It's very important because, you know, we got to let our voices be heard to Haley Barbour. First of all, the sentence that he sent down, you know, he ordering me, you know, he ordered me to give Jamie a kidney less than a year. But before all this took place, I was willing to give my sister a kidney anyway when her kidneys first failed. But the state refused me of that right because they said that it was too expensive and they didn't have no money. Of course, you know, we inmates, they don't care if we live or die. So, you know, and then it's like, okay, then we on parole for the rest of our life, which we have to pay the state $52 a month. If we don't have that $52 a month, then that's one, you know, they can violate us.
Mm-hmm.
So, and then we don't have voting rights. You know, we can't go, you know, we can't travel. If we, you know, we got to ask our probation officer, you know, to go travel. Or if we want to do this, we got to ask, you know, our probation officer. It's certain people that we can be around. You know, it's like, you know, like my sister said, we still incarcerated. And so we asking each and everybody that around the world to help us continue this fight by email, by calling. You know, they got a demonstration going on in Jackson, Mississippi, where they're going to march again, asking Haley Barber to free us. So we asking anybody to do anything that they can.
Okay.
Two things. When is the date of that march?
It's going to be April the 1st.
Yeah.
April the 1st.
Jackson,
April Fool's Day. What a great day to have it on.
That's
April
in Jackson,
Fool's
Mississippi,
day.
Right, ladies?
Yes, ma'am.
Wow. Okay.
And
so,
who do people need to get in touch with that would want to bring groups or organizations to be part of that?
They can call Shugwe Malumba. He's in Jackson, Mississippi.
Is there a number for him?
You know, I have.
Yes, sir. It's 601-353-4455.
Give that again a little slower.
Okay. 601-353-4455.
And that's you all's attorney, correct?
Yes.
Okay. So.
And that's April the 1st?
Yes.
Okay.
How did y'all feel
now,
when y'all
heard before you ask that, you know, the whole world is listening about the $52. And the main question is, I got, what do the state say that $52 is for?
Wow.
That's to supervise us. And
oh,
then we
okay.
also have to pay $30 for drug tests.
And how often you have to take the drug test?
Every month.
Wow.
Every month. So you're talking about after you all been away for 16 years, no
yes.
job, no pension,
right.
you walk out of there on the state $52 plus $30?
Yes, for drug testing.
Every month?
Yes. Well, so we say, okay, well, we pay the drug test this month, and she said we don't have to worry about it, and that's $30. But we have to pay $52 every month, and we cannot miss a month. She stressed that. She scratched it, and we went and saw her Monday because we got to report every month. And when we reported, she scratched to us that we have to have that $52 and that $30 this month, and then start next month, we only pay $52.
Then who pays for the drug test when y'all take it after that?
Oh, she said we don't have to take it no more. I mean, we don't have to pay no more.
I know,
they cover us for the rest of us being on parole.
I mean, that they will give you that for free then.
I know, we just paid that $30. They're not giving us
I know,
us
but I'm saying when you take the drug test, when they call you in for a drug test,
right?
Who pays for that since you all just paid for the first one?
I guess it's coming out that $52 every month.
Well, I think it's something, you know what you said when he said, you know, we can take you back whenever we get ready?
Yes.
I think it's two things. That in a drug test, if you're not monitoring it, and if you don't have the money to monitor it, they can give you any results, and who wouldn't believe it? They can say, well, you didn't pass the test.
And that's
and
what
said,
me and Jamie was talking about. And Jamie, you know, by her being on dialysis.
I'm back, Glenn.
Okay, by her being on dialysis, and, you know, she take different kind of medicines. And
sure.
when she was in a prison, her drug test, she failed it. And so she told our PO, she said, now, when you give me a drug test, she said, I probably sell it. Would I go back to prison? She said, well, you got to give me something from the doctor.
Yeah, and, you know, because, like, I told her that up front because the drug test that I took in prison, I failed them because all the medicine is mixing together. I have never did drugs or alcohol. I don't even smoke cigarettes. I have never did it in my whole life. And so I was letting her know that, you know, if you give me a drug test, you know, I'm subject to failed it. So I have to try to get with all my doctors and stuff, and so they can look up all the medicine I'm taking to see what they got in them. You know, so if she give me a drug test, I fail it right then, she going to send me back to prison right then until
sure.
all this can get cleared up. And, you know, I'm stressed out about that, you know, because I don't want to go back to prison.
Yep.
But it's a lot of things going on the same way you were talking about. The same way, Mr. Gregor, you was talking about the water and stuff. You know, I have to be careful. I can't take in a lot of a liquid.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Because of dialysis. You know, my normal thing.
Yes.
And, you know I need to drink a lot of water for my body, like they, but I can't take it in because if I drink too much water, then when I go to dialysis, I have a bad dialysis, and they put in too much fluid on me trying to get it all off, and that caused my heart to start racing.
Sure, yeah.
Wow. So there's still a lot of complications.
Yeah, there will be a lot of complications.
That's why it's so important when you get that transplant, you know?
Yeah.
And so the next thing we have to do now is work. To, there cannot be a transplant until the weight disappears.
Yes.
Okay,
yeah,
so now that's our number one thing now is to put a system together that you all drop that weight. And you look at it every week, how much did we, because the longer it takes you to drink it, the longer you're going to be offset, and that's life-threatening.
Yes.
Real bad.
Yes. Because, I feel myself, I tell my sister, like today, you know, it takes my voice away. I have to wait for 4 or 5 hours for my voice to come back. It takes my voice away, and I know it's a strain on my mother, also because my mother watched my sister die in 2004. My sister died of heart complications, and that runs in my father's family. Everyone have died on my father's side of the family have died of heart complications. So my mom was my sister caretaker while me and Glass was in prison, and my mom literally watched her die. So when they had to rush me to the hospital, and I spent the week in the hospital 2 weeks ago, my mom came to the – I was in the same hospital. My sister died, and I could see it in my mom's face. She was so worried because she done took that trip so many times with my oldest sister.
Yes.
And here I am. She's taking this trip now with her next to the baby daughter. And it's very stressful.
Let me ask you a question. When she had to go to the hospital, when you had rushed you to the hospital for 2 weeks, if it's not nothing personal, why did they have to take you there?
My potassium had went so high, and then I had caught an infection. Really, I brought the infection with me, and I didn't know it. I brought it from prison.
Yes.
See, I kept infections in prison.
Yes.
I used to always have to rush. They had to be rushed to the hospital where I had an infection, and I didn't know I had an infection. And I was up at 2 o'clock in the morning throwing up so bad, so I couldn't stop. And my mom and my sister called the ambulance, and they came and got me. And when I made it there. I had an infection where they had to put me on an IV drip, and then I had my potassium had went sky high because see they never checked none of that in the prison.
Sure.
I never. He asked me why was I taking medicine potassium in prison. No, I never took vitamins in prison. They never gave me that. They never gave me potassium pills. They never gave me none of that. I never knew what them numbers was until I got here in Pensacola and did my first dialysis treatment. And then they took blood, and then the next week they came around, and the nurse sat down with me, and she said, okay, let's go over your numbers. And I told her, I have never seen nothing like that.
Mm-hmm. Now, let me ask you this here. Who takes care of who's your doctor there? Who takes care of it? And how is that paid for since y'all have no insurance?
I'm on Medicaid. On Medicaid, and my kidney doctor is Dr. Humeda.
Okay,
now, what
good.
He have recommended, he went over my charts, my files, and everything, and what he recommended for me to a sedative to help lose the weight, only thing he would recommend is the lap band.
Wow.
He recommends, so now he sent a referral. I got a letter through the mail, and I got a voice message on my phone. It told me that I have to come to a seminar February the 17th at 6 p.m. that night about the lap band. They want to do
and
a
that's
seminar.
That's where they're going to. Into the stomach?
Yes, sir.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
That's the only thing he would recommend that he feel is safe for me.
Mm-hmm.
And that's to lose weight is a lap band surgery, right?
Yeah.
Yes, that's to lose weight because I was told that once I started on Dow's machine because of my kidney fail that I would feel better, but that's not the truth. I don't feel better. I don't feel better at all. I hurt throughout the night. You know, Gladys constantly runs in my bedroom and check on me because I hurt throughout the night. She hear me moaning and crying. I don't feel better. I know I need to come up off that machine. That machine is not for me. But right now, it's the only thing keeping me alive.
Mm-hmm.
Wow, y'all got a lot going on. And you know what? All of us are going to pray for you. Honest to God, we really are.
Thank you.
That things get better for you, Jamie. But hopefully with this release and newfound freedom, maybe some of the stress will be off of you, and that will relieve some of, you know, sometimes a lot of stress. Don't you agree, Mr. Gregory, can bring on medical issues?
And I'll be getting in touch with both of you in the next couple of days to work out a plan. Then I'll fly in there. And,
Mr. Gregor, because we need you to help us, too, to clear our name, too. We need this man.
Don't worry about it. We'll handle that right now. We're talking about life and death now.
Yeah.
Don't worry about the other sister. Okay? There's stuff already in the works. Don't worry about that. What we got to is worry about.
Hey, Mr. Gregor.
Yes.
Mr. Gregor, I just want to say that I've read everything you ever did, saw everything you've ever done. At least that I could see from where I am. And I've been so impressed with everything. You're one of the reasons that I'm a writer.
Incredible.
All right. Incredible.
Our co-host, Mr. A.J. Houston.
Yeah, you're one of the reasons that I'm a writer, and I try and be better at it every day, and I'm honored to have you on the show for sure.
Well, thank you so much, and just honored that you all have it. You know, money is not power. Education is not power. Information is power.
Absolutely.
And if you get bad information, you got bad power. And that's why we hear now out of their mouth, you know, what went on in there. And let me say something else to you two sisters. If you didn't eat tonight, you're not going to die.
Mm-hmm.
If you didn't have no money tonight, you're not going to die.
Uh-huh.
If someone held your nose and mouth for 30 minutes, you would die. So the most important thing on this planet is oxygen. It's free. You can't see it. You can't taste it. You can't smell it. And it's right next to you. That God force is as close to you as air is, as oxygen is. And nothing touches you on your shoulder when it says, hey, I'm the sun. You owe me X amount of money for my sunbeam. You owe me X amount of money for the rain. You know, and that's the force that you lock into, and you'd be surprised what happens. Trust me.
Wow. If you just tuned in, you're listening to the all-new KLHC 98.9 The Talk, bringing you center stage for today's topic, an exclusive interview with the Scott Sisters and Mr. Dick Gregory. If you're on the phone lines and have a question or a comment, press 1. Or if you're listening via the Internet, dial in at 347-850-8390, and again, press 1. A reminder, Mr. A.J. Houston is manning the chat room today, so if you're listening via the Internet, post up your comments and questions in the chat room. We're going to go to the phone lines. Area code 817-731. Good afternoon. You're on center stage.
Good afternoon, and how are you, ma'am?
Fine. How are you?
This is Pastor Wendell Campbell, West Mount Moriah Baptist Church. May I speak? May I say hello to the Scott Sisters and to Dr. Gregory? How are you all?
I'm fine.
Fantastic.
God bless you, my brother.
This is more for Dr. Gregory. I'm not quite as old as others are, but I have admired your work and your leadership.
Yes, thank you.
And I remember you coming to Fort Worth, and it's been years and years and years ago. I didn't really understand, and you have to forgive me then.
Sure.
I understand a whole lot better now. But I did not really understand how a black man could say the things that you said, the way you said it, and even though it was more of a stand-up, maybe it was a comedic routine.
Yes.
But the way you said it, the information that you disseminated to those of us who were there, it was absolutely mind-boggling to me how you could call this country into question about the way they were treating minorities.
Yes.
I applaud you. I admire you for what you did, what you are doing, how you're doing it even now. May I ask you a question, sir?
Sure.
And this is not to put you on the spot. What do you, and I'll hang up after this. I just really want to hear your response. And Scott Sisters, thank you for what you did. Dr. Gregory said, thank you for not dying in prison. I'm glad you didn't die either. But Dr. Gregory, what do you think about our present situation in our country, our great president, and then may I ask you about this Tea Party, Sarah Palin movement, and I'll just listen to what your response is.
Okay. First, to your first statement, information that Hoover had got in touch with the Chicago mob, with the Chicago FBI, to get in touch with the mob to kill. Because I said the slimy, unethical, ungodly mob folks who run this country in the ground, and we can't do nothing about it. So that's what he wanted them to hear. Well, an old black woman, a late black woman, she's dead now, Mother Gibson, fantastic spiritualist. She told me when I showed her the telex that someone in D.C. had slipped me. And she said, son, there's a lot of water out there in that ocean, but it can't sink your ship till it gets inside. I mean, if you keep it out of your head. And there's another thing that I live with. If the God I pray to every day couldn't protect me against some slimy, degenerate thugs, I'll be the first one to admit I'm praying to the wrong thing, and I'll help y'all pull the trigger. When you go back to say, where is this country now? Well, one of the worst days in the history of the planet, as we know it, one of the worst weeks, was the third week in September in 08. That's when capitalism died. Okay? And this president inherited, you know, like you and I, we are first responders. So we show up on the scene and the patient is dead. So as we take it to the morgue, we call it DOA, dead on arrival. This country was dead on arrival. Right before the Roman Empire fell, they put in a black emperor from Africa, but it didn't help them. And so when you stop and think about when he got here, the country is on fire. And they're so busy fighting. You see, we cannot discuss what goes on in this country and leave racism and sexism out. And our problem is we try to talk about it without talking about what the real problem is. You know, them white presidents have done anything they want to do, and they didn't have no Tea Party when Bush was in. And let me tell you something. This economic mess happened 40 years ago. It's been going down. And one of the big problems, and everybody's nervous about that, no, is they're worrying about the new leaders. See, all your major powerful nations, they fall after so long. They get into degeneracy and hope. And so when we're looking now that the Chinese is rising number one, the Indians is rising number two, and what really blew them out, little Brazil. Well, this is the first time in the history of this planet that one nation went down and another nation come up that's not white. We got three nations moving up that's not white. And if you don't understand white supremacy, and most white folks don't understand it, the Ku Klux Klan don't represent white supremacy. I remember somebody told me one time, said, well, you know, it's these little redneck, uneducated, snuff-dipping, pot-belly, living in trailer wife. I said, no, they don't determine public policy. My problem is the president of Ford and General Motors and Harvard and Yale and AT&T, but we don't want to mess with them. We want to mess with somebody who's poor and ignorant and raggedy. And so, again, when you look at the Tea Party, remember one thing. People say, well, they're racist. No. They was racist before it was a Tea Party. They ain't racist. They didn't just start. They scared. They are scared. Okay, you see, when you go back to that last Great Depression, what's different between then and now? Nobody had nothing. In 1950, 71% of white folks didn't own a car. I dare you how to teach me how to ride a bicycle, then try to unteach me how. Had it not been for that stimulus package last year, pushed through by the president and the Senate and the Congress, about 40% across this country of school teachers and cops would have been laid off. That right now, as we talk, and the reason is so good about the internet, because you can check it out, as we talk now, there's 100 major cities that's about to go bankrupt, okay? The richest county in America is Nassau County in New York City. The state had to take them over. They're on the receivership, okay? This thing is just, four banks just failed today, okay? The Bank of America, the largest building outside of New York City is in Atlanta, owned by the Bank of America, and they just about to go in foreclosure next week. When you look at the great New York Times built a brand new building, and they had to go get a juice loan. They was $200 million behind. They had to go. So it's bad. And now I get word from my contact, they're fixing to mess with the food now. The food prices is fixing to go up. In the last 8 years, fruit and vegetables, fresh, have increased 50%. The canned food then decreased 40%. And so when you look, see, we can't understand white folks, because to be born white and stay white with no education, you're born with 300 years of white privilege. We never had that privilege. And so they're going through some changes now. You got white folks that all their life, they know their children and grandchildren will go to Harvard, Yale, Stanford. They got to send them to community colleges now. We don't know that when them banks fail, how many folks, black and white, but the majority of them was white, how many of them lost? They pension plan, gone. Okay, and finally, let me say this. When these cities go bankrupt, huh, you got millions of people that didn't want to make money on their money. They just wanted to put it somewhere safe. So they put it in municipal bonds. Who would ever believe a municipality like Chicago or San Francisco would go bankrupt? And when that happens, it's all wiped out. And so, and a lot of people listening don't know that anybody listening that got over $100,000 in the bank, if that bank fail, you don't get the rest. If you got $10 million, all you get is $100,000. Baby, before these folks do this, they're going to come to the street.
Yes.
I mean, we looking at awful disaster if this thing. And so what's the Tea Party going to do when the Tea Party find out they can't do nothing? Huh? There's a bunch of barracudas that run this country, and it ain't got nothing to do with the president or the vice president or the Senate or the Congress. They can put them out anytime they get ready. They can frame them with a scandal, and who wouldn't believe it? See, when you get so low in people's eyes, what I say about you don't have to even be true. And so that's where we're going. But we black folks, let me tell you how lucky we are. The strongest two people in the history of America is the black woman. Thank you, Scott's sisters and your mother, and the black church. Let me tell you about that civil rights movement. I was there. I don't have to be validated or read about it. The 98% of the people in the forefront of that movement had Reverend in front of their name before they had PhD. And because of that black woman and the black church, we the only group of people in the history of the planet can start at the bottom of the heap and make it all the way to the top in one generation. It took the Kennedy family with all their billions, 12 generations to make it to the top, and that's after thuggery and thievery and bootlegging and murdering and all that. Look at Jesse Jackson, one of the brilliant minds on the planet. Who's his daddy? I don't know. What school does mama go to? None. All the way up from bottom to top, the only black person on the U.S. Supreme Court, Clarence Thomas, didn't know where his daddy was. Mama washed toilets and made up beds in a hotel. He went from the bottom to the top in one generation. A black man, a only black that's governor of a state right now, and the state is predominantly white. Deval Patrick, born and raised in Robert Taylor Homes in Chicago, one of the most violent places. They compared it to Vietnam. It was so violent. And he had two other brothers and sisters, had a mother and a grandmother. They had a two-bedroom apartment. The children slept in one room with bunk beds. Every third day, one had to sleep on the floor. Somebody, with their kindness, pulled him out of there and sent him to Milton Academy outside of Boston. From there, he went to Harvard. From there, he went to Harvard Law School. So brilliant, ExxonMobil plucked him out and made him head of their legal department. After that, Clinton came through and made him U.S. attorney in a predominantly all-white state, and now he is the governor. In one generation, you trace that back. to the black woman in the black church. And so I say to you, sisters, you're a good example of what happened. Your mother was there pulling, and it's going to work. Trust me, it's going to work. Y'all go to bed tonight and know that victory is here. You think you had some, you think you felt good when you came out here. You ain't seen nothing yet.
Ooh, I love that. Yet. If you just feel
thank
that, you're listening
so
to the
much,
all-new KLH 98.9 The Talk, bringing you center stage for today's topic, an exclusive interview with the Scott Sisters and Mr. Dick Gregory. If you're on the phone lines and have a question or a comment, press 1. If you're listening via the Internet, dial in at 347-850-8390, and again, press 1. A reminder, Mr. A.J. Houston has been in the chat room today, so if you have a question or a comment and you're listening via the Internet, post it up in the chat room. You know what? I agree with what Mr. Gregory said, and I co-sign all of that. You ladies are very strong women, definitely. And I asked you all earlier, how was it on the ride home when you realized that you were free? But to go back a little further, I really want to know, how did you feel the day that you went to court and they told you that you were going to receive double life sentences for an $11 robbery? What was that day like?
Oh, my God. When people ask me that question, I try to remember how I felt and stuff that day. I remember my father was alive. We wouldn't back then. We didn't know any better really, because we always thought my father was a strong one. But now, as the years go by, we knew my mother was a strong one. I truly believe my father died of a broken heart.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, we wouldn't allow my mother to go to court with us, because we knew that they was gonna end up arresting her. So my father went to court with us, and I remember sitting outside with my father. There was a little restaurant across the street from the courthouse, and he said, "Well, Jamie," my father called me Mag. He said, "Mag Robinson, you hungry?" And I said, "Yeah." I said, "I ain't eat breakfast, Dad." He said, "Well, let's go." Before we got across to the restaurant, the lawyer came out. He said, "Mr. Rascal, Miss Scott, y'all come on, the jury's back." And I'm like, "Daddy, the jury ain't been gone a good 30 minutes. They back?" And he was like, "Well, Jamie, they had no evidence on y'all. They really couldn't convict y'all or nothing." He said, "Yeah, they back." So we walking, and we just laughing and walking. We got into the courtroom. My father sat down. Me and Gladys, they told us to stand up. And the judge, Marcus Gordon, he looked at us. And I'll never forget this grin he had on his face. I will never forget it. The grin reminded me of the Grinch. I would never forget that grin on his face. And he said that, the jury of your peers have convicted, he thinks that we, the jury, find the defendants Jamie and Gladys Scott guilty and sentence their punisher to life. Then he said, "We, the jury, find the defendant Jamie and Gladys on second account and fix their punisher to life." He said, and then he came along, he said, "And I run y'all life sentence consecutive." And I remember my whole body going numb, and I remember turning around looking at my father, and an expression. And my father have ever always been a strong man to me. My father was 6'0", 235 pounds, always been a strong man, and the look on his face was like, "I can't believe this." And I just stood there, and they was telling me to come on. The deputy sheriff said he was trying to pull me, and I wouldn't move, cause I was like. This cannot be happening in America. This cannot be true. And I remember they putting me and Glass in the cell together after that, and we just held each other, and we just cried, and we just rocked. And we wouldn't eat nothing, and Gladys was pregnant, and I was so scared that she was going to lose the baby because she wouldn't eat nothing, and I wouldn't eat nothing with her. It was horrible. It was something I would never, ever want any human being to go through, even the ones that is the worst. I wouldn't even want Hitler to go through something like that. And
ooh,
I know he deserved it. But I would never want anyone to go through and feel what we felt at that moment. Like, is this America? Is this truly America? And at that moment, something my grandmama told me when I was 7 years old, when I used to come to Mississippi to visit her. She told me, she said, "Slavery is not dead in the South. It's called the law."
Wow.
She told me.
Gladys, how was it for you?
It was very hard, you know, like Jamie said, you know, because when Marcus Gordon read the sentence and all, I just looked because I was so shocked, you know, because two life sentences, wasn't nobody killed, wasn't nobody hurt, and it really affected me because I didn't understand, you know, I would have to spend the rest of my life in prison for something that I didn't do, and then for the take the jury less than 30 minutes to find us guilty. And I just felt like, you know, someone right with that. And, you know, but, like, through prayers and faith and hope, you know, I had to keep hope alive.
And I understand that both your sister and your father, both of your father and sister died while y'all were in prison.
Yes, yes.
Wow. How hard was that?
Well, when my father died, I almost had a nervous breakdown because, you know, he was our world. He was our backbone. And it really affected me real bad to the point I had stopped eating. You know, I had just confined myself to a room. You know, I almost lost it.
Wow.
Let me ask you two questions, Mr.
Uh-huh.
Gregory. You said your sister was pregnant when she was sentenced. She had the baby in jail?
Yeah, that was me. Yes,
okay.
I did. I was 4 months pregnant.
Uh-huh.
And I carried Courtney. And when I went in labor, they took me to the hospital, and they handcuffed one of my hands to the bed. And the state was there. And if it weren't for my mother and my father, she would have went to the state. But my mother and father came and got her from the hospital.
Mm-hmm. Beautiful. Wow. And let me ask you now, both of y'all have children, right?
Yes, and grandkids.
And just the fact that you have to be there for a crime that you didn't commit, and just every phase of your life, something happened. Now, when they sentenced you, you remember the look on your father's face, right? Did you hear
Jamie?
Me?
Jamie Gladys, did we lose you?
No, we're here.
Let me check the line and make sure they're open. Jamie Gladys, are you there?
Yes, we're here. Could you hear me now?
Yeah, we can hear you now. Did y'all hear Mr. Gregory's
question? The
question
I asked is in the courtroom, you did see the look on your father's face and saw the pain and the hurt, right?
Yes.
And
yes.
How about your
My
grandfather?
Daddy had... Go ahead.
How about your grandfather? Was he alive?
Yes, but my father, he wouldn't let my grandfather come because he was, you know, he was an older guy. He was real old. And
yeah.
But you like Jamie, you know, Jamie was saying that, you know, I never seen, you know, tears in my father. I never seen my father cry. But I seen tears. When I look back to give him my purse, I seen tears in my daddy's eyes. And that's something. He never let nobody see him cry. I didn't believe he could cry.
Well,
you know,
let me. The reason I asked you about your father and your grandfather, they knew more about this than a lot of people think. And I'm not saying negative. They knew what went down as a punishment. They knew that.
Yes.
Okay, now let's don't get into it. We don't want to talk about it.
We're not going to talk about it. But, you know, when I was in prison, I wrote a book about everything my father told me was that he believed the cause of me and my sister. But because my mother was so afraid, you know, she kept the book. She kept it hid. I wrote a pamphlet. I just sat down and I wrote every conversation, the visitation before my father died. He opened up to me and told me everything.
Wow.
He told Gladys to go outside, and he told me everything. So I sat down, and I wrote about it, and I sent it to my mother, but she was so afraid that something might happen to her that she never put it out.
And where's the book now?
My mother destroyed it.
Oh,
okay.
No.
Then you need – no, she did right now. You need to sit down and write it again immediately. Okay.
Okay.
See, there's some of us that know everything he told you. Some of us know what he told you and why he told it to you, right?
Mm-hmm.
But you need to sit down and put it together now because the whole world needs to know, and one day they will know, okay? That's very, very important, and you do that. And don't do it with fear. Don't do it with animosity. Just do it with your pure heart and your pure spirit. Because the universal God, see, this didn't happen to you all for no reason, huh? This didn't happen. You see, when Jesus died, okay, he died for a reason, okay?
Yeah.
When Martin Luther King died, had Martin Luther King died, this would have been a different America. They didn't kill King because of civil rights or human rights. They killed King because he became the first black person in the history of America to determine public policy. and that's not permitted, okay? So something happened down there in Mississippi that had nothing to do with you all, huh?
No, no.
And say, because when I looked at it, and I said, hey, this is payback. Before I even looked in, let me tell you, I'm the one that released the pictures. Now, you all might have not been aware of this because you're in jail, but a black man who was Secretary of Commerce named Ron Brown was supposed to have died in a plane wreck. The white folks that did the autopsy brought it by to me and showed me the bullet in the back of his head. Now, I know this. The New York Times don't know this here. The Washington Post don't know this. It was me and Mark Lane's book, Codename Zorro, that caused the Kennedy King assassination investigation, where we said Hoover was the cause of this. And so consequently, there's so much that happens out here that gets out. And I'm telling you this to say we have one of the best researchers. And after I heard about this here, first you start off with that, no, this is something, it's more to it than that. And everything your father told you, I know, okay? And I think it's very good that you put that down, put it down, put it on tape and what have you, and know can't nothing happen to you. Know that, both of y'all. Know your operation. Know everything. Know that that universal God didn't take you through all that hell for something to happen. It got you through all of that. And here you are out here talking on the radio. And you know what? Think about how many mothers and fathers and children is listening to you and something like that have happened to their mother or father, huh?
Yeah.
Think about that, huh?
Because it's a lot that happened to the people in the South.
Yes. Yes. You see, the South and the North. In the South, white folk don't care how close you get as long as you don't get too big. In the North, they don't care how big you get as long as you don't get too close. You know?
Yeah.
And so what's happening, Joe, happens up here is black folk get framed every day up here. A cop shoots somebody in the back 40 times. In the back. Okay? Or say, oh, he backed into my knife. You know, the cop said, I pulled my knife out to cut something, and he backed into my knife 1,000 times. He got 1,000 wounds in his back. All this is about to change. All this is about to change. And so I just say to you all, that, you know, stay strong and beautiful, and just look in the mirror and start seeing that weight off you.
Ooh. See, because
anything you put in. Yes, okay, and we'll handle that. Don't you worry about that. When you hang up this phone, that's the least y'all got to work. That's my job.
Okay. All right.
The universe has a way of connecting dots, doesn't it, Mr. Gregory?
Yes.
Always.
Yes, they do.
Yes.
Always.
Thank you so much.
Wow. I was surprised, you guys. I said, you know what? They've got to lose this weight. And I thought Mr.
Yeah.
Gregory could be such an inspiration in terms of helping
all right.
you all lose the weight. But I think he's going to be an inspiration in many aspects. I really
yes,
do.
Yes.
I think
and we
divided.
Can't wait to meet you, Mr. Gregory.
Don't worry about a thing. I'm going to redo my schedule and change it, and I'll pay you all a visit down there where we can really talk and start putting the steps together.
Yes, sir.
I think this is what they call divine intervention, and I'm just glad to be a part of it. Look,
and
don't
sign nothing with nobody.
Yes,
all
sir.
Right? Because
yes,
you look
sir.
Around, and there's a whole lot of people that make a fortune off of people's tragedy after you have survived it. You've gone this far. Just hang on. Don't worry about a thing.
Yes,
that.
Sir.
I absolutely love that. Ladies, let me ask you this. Y'all have this new fame that has come to you basically out of your tragedy for the most part. But how was it in prison when you all realized the media was picking up your story and you were getting national attention and people were getting behind the movement? How did that feel?
Oh, that felt great. It's a feeling that, you know, you can't explain. But, you know, we felt so blessed. But at the same time, you know, the place that we was in, we was getting a lot of negative and a lot of harassment.
Really?
So, you know, they was trying to break your spirit down. But at the same time, you know, if you got faith in God and you seeing him work, you know, no matter what they try to do or what they say to you, you're going to stay strong because, you know, through all this, and, you know, like I said, the media and my mama was sending me things off the Internet, you know, and I was staying in contact with Nancy. You know, I was staying in contact with my lawyers now. And so things was moving, and I knew that, you know, one day that it was going to, you know, me and my sister were going to walk, but I didn't know it was going to come this fast.
Yeah. And this is Gladys, right?
Yeah, Jamie, she had to go to the bathroom.
Okay, that's fine. So let me ask you, Gladys, y'all were there, and your kids were having to come and see you in prison. How was that?
It was hard. You know, we'd be excited to see them, but the bad part about it when you have to say goodbye. You know, they got to walk out the door and leave you. And, like, my mom, you know, she's 65, so she couldn't travel, like, you know, because we had visitation, like, twice a month. She couldn't do that, so we would, like, see them, like, once a year. And so it was very hard just for an hour, and that was very hard.
Now,
our best communication was through, you know, writing. And, you know, I would call home, like, once a month because the phone call was, like, $25 for one phone call. So I couldn't call home that much. So we done a lot of writing.
Wow. And I can personally attest to the fact that I called the Central Mississippi Correctional Center on you all's behalf several times after speaking with your attorney, and I am a witness. Those people are ignorant there. So I can only imagine what you all went through when you all start getting national attention.
Oh, they got very, very ignorant. You know, I had one guard come wake me up out of my sleep and tell me, you think you some because you all on the news and all this and that, but you make one move, we'll show you what you is. And I told her, I said, you get out of my room. I said, because no weapon formed against me shall prosper. And I said, if anything happened to me or my sister, my mother's a fighter and the truth will come out. I said, you just get out of my room.
She threatened you? I mean, threatened you like that?
Yes. I mean, them folks is ignorant inside that prison.
I kind of got a little taste of that, and I couldn't believe the. I told them that, you know, we were calling on behalf one time because Jamie was ill, and we understood that she needed medical attention outside of the, you know, outside the facility. And so we called to say that we were about to go live, and we wanted to know what her status was and was she being taken out. And, I mean, what I got on the other end was just I couldn't even believe people who work in a place could talk to people like that. She began.
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, it was
like
sheer ignorance.
Nobody loves you. You know, when you like, they feel like that. Don't nobody love you because you're an inmate there, and see that's the way they treat us. You know, so
I saw that coming and going every time I tried to ask for an interview with you all or I called because they said Jamie needed to go out. Anytime I heard anything from Nancy Lockhart about you all's update on what was going on with Jamie's condition, and each time I met with the same type of ignorance on the phone line. So I definitely.
Yes.
Do you
yes.
all
let me ask you a question. Was that an all women's penitentiary?
No, it was men's too. The men's was on the other side, but they would come over and fix things. But, like, we had male officers and we had K-9 male officers. And so. Basically, the K-9 male officers, they deal with the women's, and you know how men is, they very ignorant. Mm-hmm. And you know, like I said, we have seen some stuff that will scar us for the rest of our lives.
Wow. Really?
How many women guards did you have?
On a unit, it's like 108 inmates in the building, and you will have, like, two women guards on the tower. Sometimes it'd be one, because, you know, a lot of people, they end up quitting. A lot of people end up getting fired for receiving money from the male inmates, because basically anything you could buy on the streets, you could buy in prison.
Sure.
And, you know, a lot of officers used to get caught up, but a lot of time a lot of officers quit because of the way their administration was treating them. They said, you know, they're not locked up. They shouldn't have to be treated that way. And so, you know, they was always short of staff.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we're down to less than 30 minutes in this broadcast. If you just tuned in, you're listening to the all-new KLHC's 98.9 The Talk, bringing you center stage for today's topic, an exclusive interview with the Scott sisters and Mr. Dick Gregory. If you're on the phone line and have a question or a comment, press 1. Or if you're listening via the Internet, dial in at 347-850-8390. And, again, press 1. A reminder, A.J. Houston is manning the chat room today. So if you have a question or a comment and you're listening via the Internet, you can post it up in chat. I have a question for you, ladies. How was it to know what you were charged with and see people who came in with more serious crimes come and go while you all still remained? How hard was that?
That was a hurt feeling.
That was a hurt feeling because, let me tell you, a girl that I befriended, she had 15 years. She was long gone. She left me there. She left when I was in my eighth year. Well, she had a murder charge. What she did was her baby was crying.
she pulled on the side of the highway and threw the baby off the bridge. And they gave her 15 years, but she got good time off it. She got MET time, which is earned time for working. And she, on her 15 years, she did 3.5 years and left me there. There was a lot of people there. There was a lot of people there for armed robbery, like me and my sister. But none of them had to finish. Me and my sister had. They had 3 years, 4 years. One had 7 years. No one had the amount of time for that crime that we have. And, you know, even people, I slept next to people that had, you know, murdered their husband and killed their children and stuff, but none of them had no double life. So, you know, I had to keep smiling. When they walk out the door, I had the meaning in my heart when I tell them, you know, take care of yourself, do the right thing. But, you know, it was a revolving door because we saw people come in and out, in and out, in and out. You know, one girl we see, she had been there 6 times, but she never, ever received over a year.
Wow. Gladys, how was it for you?
It was hard because I didn't, you know, I didn't understand the justice system because, you know, me and my sister didn't kill nobody, didn't hurt nobody. But you give us double life sentence, and people that kill baby, innocent babies that sometimes don't even know they're in the world, and you give them a pat on the shoulders. And, you know, I didn't understand the system, so I had to pray about it. And, you know, and I vowed that one day when I get out and get on my feet, I will help fight the system because the system is messed up. It's very backwards.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. Jamie, I heard that you were next to a lady that died right in front of you.
It was Miss Alberta. Miss Alberta was an older lady in prison. Everybody say I hung around older people because I felt I could learn something from them. Even though they done made mistakes, I felt I always liked it. Even when I was younger, before I got incarcerated, that was my thing. I liked the older people because they had something to tell you.
Right.
But anyway, me and Miss Alberta, we were sitting at the table. I had came from Dallas, and we were sitting at the table. And the day before, she had said, Jamie, she said, my chest been hurt. I said, well, Miss Alberta, you go to the clinic. She said, they don't want to see me. But they called me late yesterday evening. She said, but the doctor, Dr. Williams, she said, she gave me a shot, Jamie. She said, but it was too much medicine that I needed. She said, she ain't never gave me that much medicine. And I said, well, Miss Alberta, why didn't you stop her? I said, they ain't finna shoot me with nothing, and I don't know what it is. I'll be asking questions. I said, that's why they don't like me, because I'm going to ask questions. And I said, why you didn't stop her? Why you let them put that needle in you? She said, I was hurting so bad, Jamie. She told me it was going to make me feel better. So she went and she fell on the floor. I said, Miss Alberta, get your silly self up. And she started bucking, and I started screaming. I said, y'all, something wrong with Miss Alberta. And then she took a deep breath, and her stomach swelled up, and I knew she was dead. So I started hyperventilating. They came in, they got me, and they took me outside, tried to get me some air, and she just died right there.
Wow.
You just died.
How hard was that?
That was very hard because I had did 10 years with Miss Alberta.
Wow.
Miss Alberta had a life sentence for murder. And she had been there 10 years, and I had did 10 years with her. And, you know, she was the person that I go to and talk to and confide in and stuff like that. And she never told nothing that I confided in her about or nothing like that. And she always kept up with my case. And she said, Jamie, y'all getting out of here one day. She said, I pray. She said, I deserve to be here. She said, I killed that man. She said, I did that. She said, I took his life. She said, so but y'all don't deserve to be here. And she always told me that every day. She said, and that smile on your face, Jamie. She said, oh, just wonderful. And we always talked every day. And we both young. Our date time was Young and the Restless.
Wow.
She loved Young and the Restless. And she, for her to die like that, it affected me so bad. My blood pressure went up. I ended up going into the infirmary behind that because they couldn't get my blood pressure down.
Some people said that you thought you were going to die after that. You were very fearful and kind of had panic attacks after that.
Yes.
Because you thought something was going to happen to you.
Yes, I really thought that I was going to die. And you know what? And had it one been for God, I believe I had died because I knew that they weren't giving me the right treatment. You know, even these big old knots would come all over my body. And when my mom did researches and stuff, it said that they supposed to, when the knots come up like that, they supposed to give me steroid shots in each one of the knots. Well, they told me that they were not going to pay for no steroid shots. And
wow.
And those knots got the busting and stuff, and when they got the busting, I passed out because the pain was so excruciating. I passed out, and instantly affection goes through my body. So I really thought that I was going to die.
Lord have mercy. So you had a lot of infections while you were in prison?
Yes. Yes, I caught a lot of infections.
Tell us about the conditions, because they said some of the conditions in the prison may have aided in that or caused that.
Well, the prison where I was living, when it rained outside, it rained inside.
Wow.
The sewage would bag up with the toilets and stuff. Sewage water would be all over the floor. It was mold. We lived above rows and rows of spiders, and the building was rusted and falling apart and everything. It was horrible conditions. And when the sewage bagged up, we had to sit there and smell it because the bathroom wasn't even a good 25 feet away from our living, where our beds were. And we had to just smell it and go through that and everything such as that, and ladies was breaking out with staff, and it was horrible. And I was crying, I was pleading, I said, Lord, please, you done kept me, please don't let me catch staff. Because I knew if I caught staff, my body couldn't fight it off.
Right.
I knew I couldn't, my immune system was so low.
Gladys, did you have the same situation occur in where you were?
Yes, basically all the housing units, you know, they wouldn't let people come in from the free world and, you know, and fix the plumbing and stuff. And like Jamie said, you know, it was mold there, and you had spider webs, and you had, like, when we take the shower, you know, the toilet, the stuff from the sewage would come up in our shower. We would have to jump out the shower because we didn't want to catch no infection. So I used to try to bathe and bleach every day, even though we couldn't have, you know, that was against that policy. But I used to try to keep me some bleach and bathe and pray to God that I didn't catch nothing.
People would believe that they would have someone incarcerated and then have them in conditions like that.
Sure.
And even when Nancy Lockhart, Nancy get on the phone, when I call her, she'll get on the phone. Nancy wants to start the health department coming out there. But
see,
like I told Nancy, I said, you tell the health department, by they calling and making an appointment to come, when they knew the health department was coming, they'll bring the male inmates over there to paint walls, paint over the mold, try to fix the plumbing decent enough so if the health department flush the toilet, it'll look decent. I said, Nancy, they're going to have to do a sneak attack. Because as long as they're letting them know they're coming, they're going to prepare stuff for their eyes. And that's what they used to do.
And the water was so nasty. Oh, you couldn't drink. It was like real, real dark brown, the water. I thank God, you know, my mom and other people could, you know, could afford to, you know, send me $10 or $15 so I can buy my water off canteen, the commissary, because you couldn't drink the water. And then, you know, we had to bathe in it, and it was horrible. You just couldn't drink the water. It was horrible.
Wow. God, we're just all glad that y'all lived through it. I mean, because it sounds
like a
living nightmare. That's absolutely what it sounds like. Tell us how the world has changed in 16 years, in your eyes. How has the world changed in 16 years?
You know, like, for instance, like, when we got out and I went to Walmart, and I walked in Walmart, and I was so scared because I didn't know Walmart had changed this much. And then when I went to the bathroom, and I got up, and the toilet flushed, and it just freaked me out because I had never seen nothing like that. And it just scared me to death. I was like, oh, my God.
So things have changed, I mean, in ways that you all couldn't have imagined. Cell phones, things like that you didn't have before.
Yes.
Wow.
Yes.
Jamie, how about you?
What really amazed me was, the cell phone, where you could do everything at a small device. And that shocked me because, you know, when we got locked up, they had some big car phones. And, you know, just the way the stores are today and how fast-paced they're moving and things such as that, because, like she said, when we went to Walmart, they got this one line where you could ring up your own stuff. And I was trying to keep up with it, and I got so frustrated. I was like, oh, my God. It's just so fast-paced. But I told Glad, I don't want to be fast-paced with the world. I just want to live. Because
live.
I can't keep up with all this technology.
Yes, you can. You know what? It'll come to you. Trust me. I think, you know, it's just all new to you, but we're going to pray that you catch on just like the rest of us have.
Yes.
I think it'll happen. Listen, Gladys, we understand, okay, that your parole is conditional upon you giving Jamie your kidney. Was this your idea or was this their idea, meaning the state, meaning Governor Barbers? Whose idea was it that you had to give her your kidney, even though it's an honorable thing, don't get me wrong, but we don't understand how that all started.
You know, from my understanding, he the one made the condition, but, you know, like I had said early on in the show, that I was willing to give her a kidney, so why would you make that a condition when I was willing to give her one, anyone, from day one? So I'm still, it's still, you know, it's not sinking with me neither because I don't understand that neither. When I was willing, so why you going to order me to give her a kidney when I was already going to do it? So I don't understand that. That was part of my release. I don't understand that.
I don't either. And Jamie, how did you feel when you found out that they made Gladys's parole conditional upon her giving you her kidney? How did that make you feel?
First, I was angry about it. You know, I was angry about it. Like, you know, why would you even do that? The love me and Gladys hold for each other. You know, Gladys should give me her right arm if it means saving my life. So why would you do that? And my personal opinion, I felt like it was done just to portray that that's the reason he letting Gladys out, not because she needs to be let out because she didn't commit the crime. Mm-hmm. You just stuck that on there. But like I tell everyone that asked me that question, I'm grateful that he did the first step. Gladys and I are free, but the fight is not over.
Yeah.
It's not over till Gladys and I is able to we're able to vote again. Till we're able to, if we feel like that, we want to get our kids and we go to Disney World. We don't have to check in with somebody and get a piece of paper that says you have permission to travel to Disney World. You know, it's not over yet.
Well, do we know who assigned that condition to the parole? Was it the governor or was it the parole board?
The governor.
The governor.
The governor. Okay, so Halle,
yes.
We really kind of gave him the benefit of the doubt that he was trying to do the right thing, but I thought maybe, you know, the parole board was the one that maybe assigned conditions, and maybe he didn't do that, but that it was him.
We have a copy with his signature on it, and this is his condition. It's from the governor's office.
Mm. Wow. And I read something. I have some notes here somewhere of what he said when he actually this is what he said. It says, when Governor Barber made the announcement, he made no mention of the injustice that had been done to you all. Basically what it said, from what I understand, is their incarceration is no longer necessary for public safety or rehabilitation. And Jamie Scott's medical condition creates a substantial cost to the state of Mississippi. Is that what you all understood he said?
Yes.
Okay. That is just as plain and dry and mean and cruel.
Yes.
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 So he had no feeling whatsoever for what you all had gone through.
No.
And was it Gladys that I heard was watching television when she found out she was getting out?
Yes.
Was that you, Gladys?
Yes, that was me. Yes, I was looking. I was actually reading. I had got a whole lot of mail from the NAACP, from people all over the world that emailed me. And, you know, they were sending me words of encouragement. And I had like 30 letters, and it was like front and back emails from people all over the world. And so I was reading my mail, and my roommate, because I was in the room, it was me and another girl in the room, and I was sitting on my bed, and I slept on the bottom. She slept on the top. So I didn't have my TV on. And my roommate was like, Gladys. And I was like, huh? She's like, you on TV. And I said, what I'm on TV for? So I stood up so I could look at her TV, and I seen that suspended sentence. So I started hooping and hollering. So I cut my TV on, and then that's when I heard when he said that he was suspending, you know, me and Jamie sentences under one condition, that I give, you know, Jamie my kidney. So I ran to the phone, and I called my attorney, and I asked him, he said, yes. He said, the governor just sent the order down. He said, I got the order right now. He said, it ain't even been 5 minutes ago. He said, I didn't even know how the media got it so quick, because we just got it. And he was like, yeah, you know, he was telling me, you know, that we was going home and stuff, and then, you know, the paperwork got to get done. And I started screaming. I just threw the phone down. I didn't even want to hear no more. I just started screaming and hollering and crying. And then later on I called him back, and he told me that he was going to come over there and explain, you know, the condition. Because, you know, people were like, you on parole for the rest of your life. And I was like, no, he suspended my sentence. That means I don't have no more sentence. But when my lawyer came, he explained to me, and, you know, explained the situation to me. And I was like, well, what is suspend then? You know, I was so confused.
I think we all were confused when we heard that, to be honest with you, because it did sound like everything was over, and then all of a sudden we heard about all these conditions that nobody could have anticipated that they were going to come up with.
I never thought he would come up with nothing like that, because I'm thinking suspended sentence means, you know, you through with everything. You through. But then when my lawyer, he had explained it to me. I'm studying, arguing with him. Well, what he suspend? My sentence, he suspend my sentence. And me and him was just going back and forth. And, so I just really, and then I read the order, and I was like, this messed up. So I'm still serving these two life sentences because I'm on parole for the rest of my life, which if I would have went up for parole in 2014 and if I would have made parole, then I would have been on parole for the rest of my life. So it was just like an early release. I mean, an early thing to get out of prison, but I'm still paying for my crime.
That's what it sounds like. Jamie, where were you when you found out you were getting out?
I had walked down the hall of the unit, and the other inmates was beating on the door trying to get out the door, saying, "Jamie, you free, you free." And I'm like, "What are y'all talking about?" They was like, "They said the governor suspended your sentence. You're free, you're free." And so when I went in and I called the law office, I called the law office, and then they was telling me about it. And so they said Gladys is on the other line. And I was like, tell her I love her. Tell her I was here at home. That's how I found out.
Wow.
But
you know,
like I said,
even
the commissioner of corrections, he didn't even tell us nothing. He told the news people first.
Who told the news media people first?
Yeah.
We didn't even.
We found out everything by the news.
Yeah.
Wow. And that's not right. Now, I'm understanding, I read this on the HuffingtonPost.com, and y'all correct me if I'm wrong. They said that Governor Haley Barbour wrote Gladys's release was conditioned on her donating a kidney to her sister Jamie. But Shokwe Lumumba, y'all's attorney, said that their release had no strings attached. Is that not correct? Because he said if Gladys is not a match, then she still gets out. And he went on to say that she doesn't have to donate the kidney to anyone else as a condition, and also that if there's laws against donating human organs in exchange for a value, of something of value. So which way is it? Now, that's what the Huffington Post reported.
Now, from my understanding, if I'm not a match, I do not go back to prison.
Okay.
And, like he said, it is a human right, because if I don't want to give Jamie a kidney, you can't make me give her damn. So we looking more into that. I can't tell you if that's really true, but we looking more into that, because that will violate my rights. You see what I'm saying?
Okay.
Even though that's my sister, I'm going to do it anyway, but you didn't have to make that my condition.
Right. I mean, so it does seem like there would be a law against somebody giving you money or giving you something conditional for a human organ. Basically, he said there are laws against donating a human organ in exchange for something of value. And that makes totally good sense. I didn't think of that when I first heard of it, but that does make perfectly good sense. You can't sell organs. You can't tell somebody that they have to give someone their organs. That doesn't even make sense. So
it's,
I don't know if
like,
Mr. Barbour didn't really think it through before he did it, but that doesn't sound like it's even legal.
That's just like, one of my conditions is, my parole officer was telling us, and they made a big issue about it, that I would have to give her a kidney less than a year. And like I told her, right now, the doctor, Jamie Kidney doctor, is concentrating on her weight loss and making sure that she's stable to be able to give, to be able to go through the surgery. And so her kidney doctor is not even looking at me. He's not even willing to test me. So, it could be a year, it could be 2 years until they get her stable. So, but I was also assured that I would not go back to prison, But first, that's what he got in the stipulation. That was my parole officer in Florida. They were biggest concern. And I was like telling them, it might take longer than a year or so. Like right now, we fighting with the legal system on, every aspect, because it was so many, clauses and things in there, sentencing. So we trying to get it straight right now.
Okay. Mr. Gregory, Yes. We're down to our last 5 minutes. What would you like to say to the ladies in closing?
Well, one, there is a law that says, you know, the law wasn't there that somebody would say you could get out of jail. The law was there so super rich people couldn't buy organs from poor folks.
Mm-hmm.
There's people that would like to sell their organs because they see their house being foreclosed on or their children going, that's the last thing they want to do. And so that's what that law is there for. So that's clear. You don't even have to check that out. You cannot give an organ for something of value. That is a human rights violation. It's a legal violation. But I'd just like to say in closing that I've been all over the world. I've enjoyed everything, but nothing have I enjoyed any more than listening and talking to you all, because I don't hear no bitterness. I don't feel no bitterness. And it ain't that you not being bitter, you know, is a violation of what they've done. Bitterness hurts nobody but you. If I see somebody breaking in my house and I run through a bomb in, I kill them, but I also destroy my house.
Very true.
So I just say you all stay strong. Keep putting that message out there that you're putting out there, because there's a lot of people will go to bed tonight feeling different. There's a lot of people that might be thinking about suicide or robbery and say, God, if they go through that, I know I can make it through this what I have. And so, again, we say, you got rich folk go to college and commit suicide because they flunk a class. And so what you all have been through, it was for a reason. What the reason is, I don't know. But trust me, when I hear you talk, when I hear it in your voice, and I just hope that your children understand. I hope that your mother, you know, understand. Now, they're going to look for you all. And when they see you happy and see that can't nobody make you mad or angry or nothing, then that will make them change too.
Absolutely.
Amen.
We'd have to say that's going to be the final word. I'd like to say thank you to my guests today, Jamie Scott, also Gladys Scott, and Mr. Dick Gregory. Also, I want you ladies to tell them how to reach out to you. You all, these ladies are getting back on their feet. They have been incarcerated for 16 years, wrongfully incarcerated, I like to say. So if you'd like to give something to the Scott sisters, I understand the P.O. Box is at 7100. Is that the address?
In Jackson, Mississippi?
I have a Pensacola, Florida P.O. box.
Uh-uh.
Is that the one?
No, me and Jamie, we have our own P.O. It's
okay,
Jamie and Gladys Scott.
Okay.
P.O. box 2264, Pensacola, Florida, 32503.
Okay, say it one more time.
Okay, Gladys and Jamie Scott, P.O. box 2264, Pensacola, Florida. Is 32503.
Okay. And their website, freethescottsisters.blogspot.com, is how you can find out more information about them, freethescottsisters.blogspot.com. But I'd also like to say, as a reminder, the views and opinions of our guests do not necessarily reflect that of Center Stage or the host. And also on the 19th, next Saturday at 3 p.m., the topic will be, how can I stop my foreclosure? Our foreclosure expert will be Mr. Ray Williams. He will be with us. On behalf of AJ and myself, we'd like to say thank you for tuning in. Again, thank you to Jamie and Gladys Scott, as well as Mr. Gregory. And we'll see you next time. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
God bless. Bye-bye.
God bless.
Thank you all for hanging out. Appreciate it.